This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The walls around the Trump administration continue to crumble after another Trump advisor is indicted. Roger Stone is charged with obstruction, making false statements, and witness tampering related to the Mueller investigation. Meanwhile, federal employees will miss their second paycheck as the partial government shutdown continues. And yesterday, senators rejected two bills that could have ended the standoff. Meanwhile, Democratic House Majority Leader Nancy Pelosi refused to bend and canceled the State of the Union address during the shutdown. Those are just some of the topics we will talk about with political junkie Ken Rudin. Hello, Ken.
Hi, Frank.
You and Roger Stone, I saw a nice picture of the two of you on Facebook. He's a good guy to know, right? Lots of inside information.
Yeah. Well, you know something, I happen to have known him for a very, very long time. He's even a button collector, which I think puts a blemish on most of the other button collectors out there. But I've known him for a long time. I was at a Politicon event in California, and I was moderating a panel about impeachment, and he was on the panel. And in the middle of the panel, I stood up, removed my jacket, and I had a big scotch-taped Roger Stone photo on my back, pretending it was a tattoo, because, you know, he has a Nixon tattoo.
He has a Nixon tattoo. He's a self-described dirty trickster. He calls himself a dirty trickster, worked for Nixon, and has a Nixon tattoo on his back. Now he's been indicted. So tell us about this, because let's talk a little bit more about what's current, because this guy's got a reputation. He's, as I said, self-described political trickster. Sarah Huckabee Sanders today says his arrest today, he's now out on $250,000 bond in Fort Lauderdale, has no impact on has nothing to do with the president or the White House.
Well, first of all, it wasn't $250,000. I found out that it was paid in rubles. Now, that's a bad sign already. So that's a bad sign already. But you know something? I mean, the fact is that he has been, from the beginning with these WikiLeaks, stealing of the emails from the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign in 2016, Roger Stone basically took credit for it. He said he was involved with WikiLeaks. He was talking to WikiLeaks. He predicted what was going to happen before it happened. And now, of course, now that he's indicted on 7 counts and all these things, he says, well, I was just bluffing. I really had nothing to do with this.
Yeah, but the real issue here is the connection with the campaign during the 2016 campaign, and how much of that information was did they ask for, how much did they get, and how much is the president and the campaign complicit in what may be illegal activity.
Roger Stone has been with Donald Trump from the beginning. He was the campaign manager in 2000 when Trump was talking about running as a Reform Party candidate for president, and Roger Stone was with him. He's been there forever, and the fact that basically it looks like that the campaign in 2016, once those first WikiLeaks release of emails were released, according to the indictment, the Trump campaign asked Roger Stone to see what he can get, how much he can get about other leaks as well, and Stone came up with them. So to say that there's no connection, for Sarah Sanders to say with a straight face that this has nothing to do with the president, well, look, you know, I mean, she says everything with a straight face, and right. We all shake our heads.
It's her job. And let's talk about the shutdown and the showdown. Donald Trump meets another strong woman. He was outvoted by one in 2016, though he won the presidency. Nancy Pelosi. This is a fascinating showdown because, again, here's somebody who Democrats were about to turn their back on. Turns out to be the foil.
That's what's so amazing to me. I mean, that's exactly right. Nancy Pelosi is old. She's tired. She's out of touch. The Democrats need new, fresh blood. She's the first person I could think of, let alone the first woman, to stand up to Donald Trump and win. I mean, basically, Donald Trump was threatening. He said, I'm still showing up to the House chamber on the 29th, and I'm going to give the State of the Union. And she said, not so fast, Mr. President. I am rescinding the invitation. And he kind of, like the president didn't know what to do, he backed down. So, you know, given the, you know, what he did, what the president did when Paul Ryan was speaker, just stepping all over him, Nancy Pelosi made it very clear she will not be stepped over on, and she sees herself as an equal partner in government, which constitutionally she is. And wow, I mean, it was just really something to see somebody stand up to him and not back down.
What this does to the general population in terms of their perception of this power struggle remains to be seen. But it would have to be heartening for Democrats, I would think, to see this kind of strength in these times.
It is, absolutely, because, you know, he's been talking about how he... I mean, in the past, actually last year when they tried, when the Democrats tried to, they called it the Schumer shutdown, when Chuck Schumer tried to engineer a shutdown over the fact that the Dreamers were not being protected, it went nowhere. Trump got a big victory out of it. And of course, he was talking about the Schumer shutdown and how badly that failed. Well, that doesn't work this time, especially in that White House meeting with Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, when Schumer gladly, when Trump gladly said, I will take full credit for it. I will be responsible for the shutdown. And the polls show, boy, is he ever responsible for it. His numbers are the lowest it's been in ages, because most people, an overwhelming amount of people, think that he and the Republican Party are responsible for this shutdown, now already at like 35, 36 days old.
And it means he's taking responsibility for federal workers not seeing their second paycheck. They're having to go without a paycheck now for the second time. Yesterday, two competing bills presented, both rejected, but actually the Democrats' proposal in the Republican Senate did better than the Republicans. Tell us about what was happening there.
Well, we knew they would both fail because they needed 60 votes, and neither one was going to get 60 votes. The first one was backed by President Trump. It was the Republican plan that would add the $5.7 billion for the border wall. They'd reopen the government, but with the money for the wall. That failed by a much larger number than the Democratic plan, which also was going to open up the government, but no money for the wall. And not only that, six Republicans voted for it. Interesting, some of the Republicans, like Cory Gardner of Colorado and Susan Collins of Maine, they're up for re-election next year, and they feel the political heat about this shutdown. So I think it was a big, given the fact that it's a Republicans-controlled Senate, you had the Democratic plan getting more votes than the Republican plan. If nothing else, I think this will lead to some kind of a deal, I think, sooner than later. I mean, given what the administration, when you have Wilbur Ross, the Commerce Secretary, going out and saying, well, I don't know why these people need food, have to go to food banks. Why don't they just get a loan? I mean, the out-of-touch comments from the administration is killing them. And I think there's now a bipartisan group of eight Republicans, eight Democrats in the Senate that are talking about a three-week stopgap measure that will reopen the government and negotiate. And I think that will happen sooner than later, because right now the Republicans are taking a beating.
It took Wilbur Ross a while. In fact, I'm still not sure he understands why that was out of touch, but somebody told him he was. But, you know, in his favor, what he should have said was, look, I've got $700 million. Come see me for the loan, and I can do it on pretty favorable terms. But that didn't come up. Hey, listen, I want to change subjects here and talk about something that happened here in North Carolina. North Carolina Congressman Mark Walker takes to Twitter, and he's trying to support the wall. And he's telling mostly his constituents, but anybody who's listening, here's why we need a wall. And what he's talking about are the number of refugees and immigrants who are subjected to and victims of sexual violence and who are victims of violence. And the numbers are staggering. The problem is they're victims of violence before they got here. That's why they want asylum. And he was trying to tell us why that's why we should keep them out. Mark Walker, talk about that.
Doesn't Mark Walker know there are fact checkers out there? I mean, he came up with these two things that are just so beyond the pale. He talked about the thousands of people, women, who were being assaulted at the border. But no, they were assaulted when they were leaving El Salvador and Honduras and Guatemala. That's when they were assaulted on their road through Mexico, not at the border, as he said. And he also said that 200,000, I think he said 200,000 migrant children illegally crossed the border last month. That's not what happened. I mean, 200,000 were stopped at the border. Maybe a few got in, but not that they got through the border. And so all you have to do is say something like that. You know that there are people who are going to pounce on it with something called facts and fact-checking.
Right.
And I don't know why more people don't understand that.
And so much of the violence also occurred in those countries where they were fleeing, which is why they're seeking asylum. And so
That's why they're fleeing to begin with, right.
Incredible. 9th Congressional District, another big story in North Carolina. And this week now, we've got some legal clarity. A Wake County judge denied a petition to seat the Republican candidate after obvious, pretty clear vote tampering. Mark Harris, apparently, this is not the first time something like this has happened, right, Ken?
Well, no. I mean, that's interesting. I mean, there's something, if all you have to do is Google something called the Bloody Eighth. In 1984, there was a congressional election in Indiana where the Democrat Congressman Frank McCloskey had an early lead, but then the Republicans, with a recount, got a lead as well, and the Republican Secretary of State certified the Republican as the winner. And so, but the Democratic House refused to seat him. See, this is different because I think the Democrats were way wrong in 1984, 1985. They refused to seat the Republican because they had a gigantic lead in the House, but they wanted to protect every seat they had. So they refused to seat him. And then when there was another recount that benefited the Democrats, they seated him immediately. And Republicans were livid. They stormed out of the Congress. They shut down the House for days, saying this is a theft of a district, of a seat, and it was. I mean, this basically was the beginning of the rise of Newt Gingrich talking about Democratic overreach. But in this case with Mark Harris, I think both sides agree that there is so much questionable dealings with absentee ballots that there's no way in the world that the Democratic House was going to seat Mark Harris. And I mean, the only thing that could be resolved is with or without Mark Harris, there's going to have to be a new election, which the Democrats didn't allow back in 1984 in that Indiana seat.
Political junkie Ken Rudin. Ken, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
I get very emotional on your show, Frank. I noticed that.
I didn't leave his time. I was just going to say Rudy Giuliani, but I have no time for that. So next time.
Goodbye.
Political junkie
Goodbye.
Ken Rudin. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Just ahead, we'll take a look at a podcast that takes a much broader view of Southern identity. Stay with us.